many devotees were disturbed, you know, that this had actually happened, you know. You're supposed to be carrying yourself in a certain way, you know. So a big controversy arose, you know, that, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples had beaten up some of the wrong Ramakrishna people. So it got back to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So he would make no comment. But when there was a private darshan that night, the question was raised, you know. So they wanted to know if this was right. And Bhaktisiddhanta said, "This is very good." Publicly, he didn't want to say, of course, but confidentially, you know. Just like Prabhupada. You know the story of, well, it's a long story, and His Holiness Giriraj Swami will very soon be coming out with a book on the, you know, the Prabhupada's pastimes at the Bombay Temple. You may know something from Lilamrita, how it was such a struggle for Prabhupada to, and the devotees to establish that temple. Years and years of just, you know, legal battles and people actually attacked the temple. The Gundas, they attacked the temple, and the police didn't do anything, and devotees were, one Mataji, Maiti Healy, she was dragged, she tried to protect Radharasa Bihari. You know, in India, the custom is that if you establish a deity, he can never be moved. So there was some controversy. You know, Mr. Nair, he sold us the land. Well, he got the money, but he never gave the deed for the property, and he, by some trickery, he arranged that, you know, he didn't have to give. So we'd given money, you know, imagine, he'd gotten money from Prabhupada, but legally he didn't have to give the papers for the land. So it was a big legal battle. So Prabhupada, what he did is he took Radha and Krishna, Radharasa Bihari, he got them from Jaipur, and he brought them to the land at Juhu Beach, and he put them on the land and built a little shack around them. And he said, "My dear Lord, if you stay here, I promise you I will build you a temple." That's why Bombay Temple is so dear to devotees, because it's a manifestation of Prabhupada's desire and promise to Radha Krishna. He said, "My dear Radharasa Bihari, now you're here in this little shack, but if you stay, I promise I will build you a big temple." So in India, the tradition is you can't move the deities. No Hindu will do that. So, but the police and the local people became very frustrated, you know, because under the Mr. Nair's influence, people, you know, wanted to throw us out. So one day they came. It was just one of those aluminum type of building, a shack around the deities. And they came, they started to demolish it. And they were breaking it down, and then they came to break the deities. And Maiti Healy, she's a big girl, older devotee, big girl, she was there, you know, "All right, come on, you know, all right." She's fighting the Gundas all by herself. "So this is not Krishna conscious, you know, she's a lady, what is she, this is not ladylike, this is not a Vedic woman." Prabhupada said, "For our ladies," he said, "they're the ladies, so they are like a lamb at home and a lion on the chase." Right? In the temple, the ladies are not shy, chase, you know. When they get out on Sangirtan, you know, "Hare Krishna, take this book, you know, give it to me." Because some of the Sangirtan girls came to ask Prabhupada, you know, we're ladies, but, you know, when we go in Sangirtan, we have to really exert ourselves, you know. Prabhupada said, "That is all right. That is all right. It's like here in Kirtan. The ladies are fired up. So, that's all right. That's very nice." Reminds me of the old days when we were in New York City. You know, there was a big temple room, so the men had half and the ladies had the other half, and it was just, there was no hard and fast rules. They were these wild kirtans, you know. So it's actually nice to see all the devotees chanting and dancing like this. Just putting my 2 cents in, because I know. Anyway, so Maiti Healy, she's there, you know, boom, 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 fighting the Gundas. So they knock her down. And, you know, just to humiliate her, instead of carrying her out, they drag her by her, you know how the ladies tie their hair back. They took her hair like that and dragged her out. She's a heavy woman. They just dragged her out by her hair, you know, and beat her outside. So just at the last moment, of course, one devotee was actually escaped, and he called the someone in the government who was like favorable to us, and they reversed this order to destroy the temple. And they came, and just before they were going to destroy the deities, they came just at that last moment, you know. So it was quite a scene, you know. So what would have been more Krishna conscious to do? To sit down and go, "Om Shanti, Om Shanti." You know, don't become angry, Prabhu. Just be non-violent. Don't be an Om Shanti, 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 Shanti. Please, please, please. No. If you don't become angry, that means you're not devotee. On behalf of the Lord, you pick up that stick and you beat the gundas. It's like that sometimes, you know. Probably sometimes we have to manifest this anger on behalf of the Lord. Kshatriyas, you can imagine the Kshatriyas in the Vedic culture. Kshatriyas, they were devotees. There were many Kshatriyas who were devotees. So how did they express their devotional service? We express our devotional service as Brahmins by preaching, by keeping clean, by going out and preaching. You know, Shango Panga, preaching Krishna. So, but a Kshatriya had to protect religious principles. So his devotional service to the Lord was manifested by his fighting. That's why they were such good fighters, the Kshatriyas. When Govindaji came to Jaipur, the Muslims could never infiltrate Jaipur. They could never, they conquered all of India practically, the Muslims. They couldn't get Jaipur because the Rajput kings and the soldiers were so attached to that deity of Govindadev. They would just go into battle yelling, Govindadev, Govindadev. And to be in that army, you had to be 7 feet tall. If you've been to India, you've seen how many 7 foot tall Indians there are. Not very many. They are generally little people. So you find one 7 foot Indian, he's a big man. So to be in that army, you had to be 7 feet tall. And the Kshatriyas were fearless when they gave up their lives. A Bhakta, Kshatriya, when he had to give it, he was, you know, to die in the battlefield. Prabhupada said to suffer an injury in the Sankirtan movement is a glorious thing. So the Kshatriyas, sometimes they would be fighting in close battle. Prabhupada described this. They would be fighting with their swords, close contact. And it would become apparent that, you know, one person was going to be killed because, you know, he was not in the right position. So, you know, he was going to be killed. So what he would do is he would take the enemy's sword, and rather than be hit by the enemy's sword, he would grab that sword and pull it into his own abdomen in order to bring his opponent closer. And just as he was dying with his own sword, he'd cut off the other person's head. So instead of just getting killed, he was so courageous, you know, he'd trick the person, he'd grab this and pull the person would be holding onto the sword, so, come closer. And as he pulled it into his own abdomen, off with his opponent's head. This is Kshatriya. Kshatriyas would never refuse a fight. Just like a devotee, he never refuses an opportunity to preach. It's also a form of fighting ignorance, fighting a religion. When you're downtown, even the Christians come up. What's the use of speaking with a Christian? You can never convince them. But they come up and a devotee says, all right, you know, Jesus said, thou shalt not kill, and, you know, you're killing animals, and, you know. Devotees, just like a devotee, a Vaishnava, a Kshatriya fights to uphold religious principles. A devotee fights by his preaching to establish religious principles. So, so Nisringa Guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarada, he would not tolerate any instruction in anything which was contrary to Krishna consciousness. And he was a very, very powerful preacher like that. So much so that when he would come to town, the Mayavadis didn't even want to speak with him. They would just run away. So, just consider what I have said to you, which will act as a medicinal treatment upon disease. Control your anger. He's not saying don't be angry. He's saying control it. Control your anger. Because it wasn't wrong that he got angry because the Yakshas killed his brother, Uttanapada. So he could be, but he was becoming excessive. He got out of control. Anger can't get out of control. So under the instructions of Swayambhuva Manu, he comes back to his proper position. And of course, Prabhupada mentions in his purport the famous story of the snake who became a disciple of Narada. And all the little children used to throw sticks and stones at him because he was a snake, but he didn't retaliate because he was a devotee now. So then, he complained to Narada Muni. And Narada Muni said, you know, well, I didn't tell you not to show your hood, you know. I told you not to bite, but you can feign anger like that. So sometimes anger is necessary in Krishna consciousness. So are there any questions? Comments? Maharaji?
Thank you.
I would answer again, as Prabhupada quoted Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that man's glory lies in his common sense. So I would say that in that particular instant, you're doing the right thing. Because if we'd had a direct confrontation and became angry at their nonsense, then they would go away. And just like Prabhupada said to the Sangatana devotees, you know, if you approach them and they become angry and go away, then you're nonsense. This was in the days when we were like pushing books in the airports, you know. And sometimes we would go up to people and like really like insist, and they would become angry. And then Prabhupada found out about that. He said, that's not Sangatana. You know, that's not Prabhupada, that we agitate the people and make them go away. You know, we have to be a little... A devotee is also diplomatic. Prabhupada quoted, fighting fire with fire. And he gave the example of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Who could be more pure than the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, where Rupa Nuga is following in their footsteps? But that doesn't mean that, you know, they were also diplomatic. To the extent that, you know, when Sanatana Goswami was in the jail, he didn't just, you know, sit there and say, well, this is Krishna's mercy, you know. And I, you know, he had his service to do. So, and he wanted to see Lord Chaitanya, so he used a little trickery. He was diplomatic, but in the service of the Lord. So he told the Muslim guard, you know, I'll give you 10,000 gold coins if you let me out. And he made up a whole story. It was a lie. He told a lie. But it was for Krishna. And, you know, he told the Muslim guard, just tell him that, you know, I went to the banks of the river to pass stool, and I fell in the river and I drowned. And that was the last you saw of me. So the guard swallowed it, you know. He said, okay. And he gave him 10,000 gold coins, and then he was let out. So, you know, we have to be diplomatic also. In other words, a devotee has to know. And one definition of a devotee is an expert at everything. So a devotee, Prabhupada said, is an expert judge of time and circumstance. And we saw this when we traveled with Prabhupada. Prabhupada was like so expert at preaching. He knew how to bring a person's Krishna consciousness forth wherever that person was in the modes of nature. And different, he would relate differently to different people. One time we were in Paris, and Prabhupada was speaking with one student, and you know, this French student was just so obnoxious, you know. And one point, one devotee, Yogeshwari, said, you're defeated. Can't you see you're defeated? He said, I'll never be defeated. Never. So Prabhupada said, Hare Krishna. So, Prashad, you know, then the prasadam was brought, you know, and the boy was like, you know, hungry after the debate, so he started really eating prasadam. So then after he left, you know, Prabhupada just kind of made a little remark. He said, so, we defeated him. He took prasadam. And then other times, Prabhupada just kept going and going and going until the person just relented and admitted defeat. And Prabhupada could preach to scientists, he could preach to housewives, he could preach to businessmen, he could preach to politicians, you know. So he was, my point is, he was an expert judge of time and circumstance. Sometimes Prabhupada would become very angry. And sometimes Prabhupada would control his anger. All with the understanding of how to bring that person to the point of Krishna consciousness. By exhibiting anger, sometimes that helps the person. If someone's angry with you, actually the duty of the spiritual master is to chastise the disciple. Sometimes the spiritual master may become, you know, you just, even when there's no cause for it, just to keep the disciple in line. But, so, you know, that anger has a purpose. And sometimes, you know, we appreciate being chastised, isn't it? Temple president chastises us. You know, we maybe like first, you know, but then afterwards, just thank you, I needed that. The other day I spoke strongly to a devotee. And then afterwards the devotee came and said, thank you, I needed that. So sometimes anger is appropriate to just, you know, we're like in the mode, you know, and a good kick there. Oh, thank you. And sometimes it's not appropriate. Sometimes it may have an adverse effect. Sometimes, you know, you have to give a pat on the back. Person's doing nonsense, but you say, it's going to be all right. Don't worry about it. It's got a bright future ahead. Just keep chanting. You're going to make it. You know, that's just what I needed, Prabhu. Thank you. A few weeks later, you're just a nonsense. Now stop it. Whew, thanks. That's exactly what I needed. So my point is, a devotee has to be an expert judge of time and circumstance, and that comes through experience. A preacher learns how to preach by preaching. If you want to know how to preach, you just preach. And you'll never be the loser because, you know, whatever you're saying is Krishna conscious, the person's going to be the gainer. But the expert preacher is the one who can bring people to the conclusion of surrendering to Krishna. Even if it's just a little bit, you know, just a little bit. Even in the most adverse conditions, you know, we can make progress with people. One time there was a man who attacked our Harinam party in Paris. Big guy. He's about 7'7". Not quite that big, but he was a big guy. He was like a weightlifter or something, you know, and he had a big beard, and, you know, it was a summer day, and he attacked our Sankirtan party. And I was distributing halava. We used to distribute little cups of halava. So he attacked the party, and he came for me. And I didn't see him at first. So I just turned around, and this big kick came, and boom, the halava, you know, whoosh, this guy fell all over the ground. So, you know, then he went for one of the Matajis, you know, and he picked her up like this and put her against the wall. So I was the one nearest by, so I ran, and I turned him around and I swung at him, but I missed. Oops. I missed, but in his attempt to avoid the punch, he lost his balance and fell on the ground. So then I straddled him and I went, you know, don't you do like that again, you know, and he was looking really afraid, you know. I was thinking, wow. And in his bewilderment, he got on his knees and he started picking up halava and eating it off the ground. He was just like, really, you know. You know. And I was thinking, well, you know, he's making spiritual advancement, just let him keep eating, you know. So he kept eating and then he got up and I started again. I said, now don't you ever do anything like that. He started backing away like he was really afraid, you know. I said, yeah. Don't you ever do that again. Don't you come before our Sangatan party, kick the halava, attack our devotees. He's backing away. I think, God, this guy's really a coward, you know. He's much bigger than me. So then he just went and took off running. And I turned around like to smile at the devotees, just see, you know. And when I turned around, there was 20 brahmacharis behind me with big sticks, you know, and their fists and kartals and mridangas, you know. And I realized, you know, it wasn't me who was running away from it. It was these 20 brahmacharis, you know. But anyway, does that tie into the answer to your question? A devotee is an expert judge of time and circumstance. Anyway, he got his halava and he got purified. So we have to react to each situation differently. So I would say if, you know, someone's coming as a transcendental meditator, actually if you get on the case, you'll know they'll go away. You know they'll go away. They're just, that's the way they are. Prabhupada said, like, it's difficult to train people like that. He gave the example of the violin teacher. Someone came to take instruction from a violin teacher. And the violin teacher said, you know, he's a brand new person, didn't know anything about violin. He said, it's okay, $10 for you. And a few moments later, a very expert violinist came along who wanted more lessons. But he was like playing in a kind of a funny way. So then the teacher said, for you, $1,000. And the man said, but I know so much, and he knows so little. You're charging him 10, but you're charging me 1,000? So then the man said, yes, but I can start from the beginning, but for you, I have to, you know, untrain you, take you all the way. You've learned so much bad technique, I have to untrain you, so therefore it's going to be $1,000 for you. But the same way, these people who are, you know, kind of quasi-spiritual groups, they come. They're actually the hardest to get to surrender because they have so many misconceptions, you know. So you have to really work on that. Whereas somebody comes, you can just, you know, some person coming to first, don't you see how you're suffering in this material world? Give up your nonsense. Become a devotee. Stop this. Okay, I'll give it a try. But if you did the same thing, you know, with these TMers, you know, just stop this nonsense meditation. You know, your guru's just bogus. Hey. He go, he'll never come back. So we have to control our anger. Same instruction to Dhruva Maharaj. All right, get angry. Kill the yakshas. It's okay. But at one point, you know, okay, another point, control your anger. So in one sense, we can become angry. Another time, we have to control our anger. And this is up to the expertise of the devotee. And if you don't know, ask someone. If you don't know what you should do in Krishna consciousness, then go ask your temple authorities and they'll tell you. But one way or the other, do the right thing. Don't like Prabhupada said, you know, don't agitate the people and they go away, and then you're nonsense. But act in such a way as whatever is necessary to bring them to Krishna consciousness. So what's the best thing for these TMers? Just to eat tons and tons of prasadam. Tons and tons of prasadam, and it'll clear away their cobwebs in the brain. And kirtan. Lots of kirtan and prasadam. And then whatever they can hear, that's for their benefit. Oh, there you go. Right. We always say distribution is the solution. Do I have time to tell one more story? You're not too, everyone's kind of moving around a little bit. I'll tell you one really nice story. You have 3 hours? Take some more licorice here for my voice. This just shows you the transcendental potency of prasadam and devotees association. We used to do traveling sangirtan in France. This is 73, 74. We used to live in a van, looked like a Volkswagen van, seven of us. I'm sure you've all had the same experiences. Those are some of the best days of my Krishna conscious life, you know, all packed in there in the freezing cold at night, you know, with seven brahmacharis in this little Volkswagen van with all our books, our belongings, our altars, our deities, you know, everything. But sometimes when it got too cold, or otherwise, even in the summertime, we would sometimes try to go to monasteries, because in Europe there's a lot of monasteries. So we would go to the monasteries, and we'd ask the monks if we could sleep there, because, you know, they were generally kind of quite nice to us. So we used to like to stay with the Trappist monks. Trappist monks is an order of Christian monks who are vegetarian and celibate and etc., etc. But they're very austere. And they only eat apples, soup, and bread, I think twice a day. One apple, some soup, and a piece of bread. So we stayed at their monastery. This is up in Alsace-Lorraine. It's in the eastern part of France, kind of cold there. So we stayed in the Alsace, this was actually summer, excuse me. So we stayed with them in the Alsace-Lorraine. They had a beautiful monastery, they had cows and everything. And they put us in the basement, kind of a basement area. They had a room down there. And no one would ever go to visit them. It was quite unique for them also to have some visitors. So we used to give Bhagavatam class every morning. And I forget, one monk, he'd been there about 16 or 17 years. He, you know, came to the room to do something, turn off the furnace or something, or, and he came and he heard a little bit of the class, you know, so he asked the next day if he could come hear the class, because generally they were not allowed to associate with us. So we said, oh yes, you can come, we have class every morning 6:30. So he started coming to the class regularly, and he was, you know, an important person there, and he started hearing Bhagavatam. But we would be cooking prasadam, you know how it is in Sangirtan, you have your pots in the back during the class, you know, or cooking, you know. I mean, we would cook it up. A nice prasadam every morning. So, you know, we'd always ask him to take prasadam, he would never take, he wouldn't take one grain. He said, no, I've been a monk for 20 years, and, you know, I have my vows, and I said, just take this little sweet. He said, sweets? Never sweets. We never take sweet. Soup and bread and apple, but you know, no sweets. Imagine, he hadn't eaten sweets in 20 years. So, it's horrible, huh? It's like hell. So, then we stayed there about some weeks we were there, and he's coming to a lot of the classes. Whenever it came time for prasadam, he'd get up and walk out, you know. So then it was Balaram's appearance day. So I went back to Paris, and you know, I was like the Sangatan leader. So I went back to Paris to, you know, to meet the temple authorities and, you know, make a strategy and to get some more books. And so it was Balaram's appearance day. So we had this wonderful feast, you know, wonderful Balaram. Like we had this big pot of Varuni beverage, just honey. You know, generally Varuni beverage is like one quarter honey and the rest is yogurt. But in these days it was like, you know, 9/10 honey and a little bit of milk in it, you know, swish it around with some spices, you know. And they drink these Varuni beverages, and there was big gulab jamuns made with honey and lots and lots and lots of sweets. So there was so much prasadam. I loaded up the van with this huge feast because I knew the devotees wouldn't be able to cook something very nice back in the Alsace, Lorraine. So I took this, drove my van back with mostly prasadam and some books, you know. And then we got to the monastery, and then we unloaded the van and the books and everything and took the prasadam down. So the next morning, you know, we heated up the gulabs and we had a whole thing, you know, so that this monk, he came to the class. So I didn't give class that day. There was one devotee, he was 15 years old, his name was Prakasatma. He was a very good preacher. He was 15 years old, but he like was such a good preacher. Like people were like really enchanted by him because he was such a young boy. You know, he knew Bhagavad Gita backwards and forwards, and he could, just because he was so young, when he spoke, people accepted it. That's why Prabhupada wanted our Gurukul kids to go out and preach, because people just, like, believe it when a kid says it. So anyway, he gave this wonderful class talking about Krishna, and how the Lord is non-different than his name, than his form, than his paraphernalia, and than his prasadam. So somehow or other, he touched the heart of this monk. And the monk, like after the class, I said, you know, boy, it definitely is going to take something. I said, will you take a little prasadam? He said, okay. He said, because that young boy has spoken so nicely, I'll take, you know, a little rice, just a couple grains of rice, because it's God's food. He was convinced it was God's food. I said, okay, so just sit down here. So then we bought the prasadam, but there wasn't very many salty things. It was mostly sweeties. So I said, you know, this is Prasad's the mercy of God. You know, once he was there in the atmosphere, you know, I think he took a couple of grains, you know, and he got the digestive juices working. You know, I said this, you know, it's traditional that we honor the Lord's food by taking what has been directly offered to him. It's called Maha Prasadam. So then Prakasatma started preaching again. What is Maha Prasadam? And he, oh, okay, Maha. So I said, give me a few grains. I said, well, unfortunately, the Lord has only eaten sweets yesterday, you know. I said, I haven't eaten sweets in 20 years. I said, but, you know, this prasadam transcends all rules and regulations. You know, we're like, you know, you know, all the devotees are working and we're all around him, you know. So I said, he said, okay. He looked over at the door to make sure it was locked, you know. And he's in like in his, what do they call this dress the monks wear, you know. So then, he said, okay, just but a little bite. I said, well, I'm sorry, but this is a gulab jamun. And you can't eat, take a bite out of a gulab jamun, otherwise it leaks all over the place. What you have to do is you have to take it in one bite. I said, that's the way. I said, Prakasatma, show him how to do it. So we had these, not like you have these little ones here, we just like this, you know, big one like that. He took a big one and he, you know. Because you got to do like that. If you can eat a gulab, you got to do it the right way. He said, but, I said, you said you would. You know, so, you know, devotees are like, wow, 20 years he hasn't eaten sweets. You know? So I said, okay, open his mouth. I took that gulab and I put it in his mouth, you know. I said, okay, chew it, you know. And it was such a big gulab that all the juice started running out of his mouth, you know. And his eyes lit up, you know. He just like, he looked like a little kid, you know. And he was chewing that gulab jamun like that, you know. He's like really enjoying it. I mean, I never saw anybody just like, for a long time he chewed it, you know. And his juice is like dripping on his frock and everything, you know. And he opened his eyes and he said, can I have another one? Sure, no problem, you know. I can have another one, you know. Then we gave another one. He ate 9. And you can imagine not eating sugar or sweets for 20 years, you know. It has, I mean, prasadam has an intoxicating effect as it is, you know. Is this a fast day? So then, you know, he ate 9 gulabs, and then we had this, you know what baklava is? It's like a Greek preparation. It's full of honey and nuts. So it was a heavy pastry. You know? Then he said, and the devotee thought, well, that's okay, you know, it's enough. And then he said, what's that? Oh, that's baklava. He said, I'll try a piece of that. And he ate three pieces of, you know, big pastries, and it's dripping with honey, you know. Baklava. Then we had sandesh, and we had a big bucket of ras malai and shrikhand. He really went for the shrikhand, you know. He just, you know. And there was different kinds of cakes and things, you know. Like for 45 minutes, you know. I mean, we were eating, but this guy's like going to town, you know. And then he's getting completely intoxicated. He starts laughing and laughing and later, you know. Even the devotee was thinking, boy, those guys are gone, you know. And then he's getting completely intoxicated. He starts laughing and laughing and later, you know. Even the devotee was thinking, boy, those guys are gone, you know, he's gone. He was gone. And he was like crying, you know. He's like sometimes you ever get in those situations where once in a while you just laugh so hard you just have to hold your stomach, you know. It hurts to laugh, you know. And you're crying, it's uncontrollable. Like yesterday I was in the office. And who was I with Pundarik, and we were discussing, and there were some ladies upstairs, you know, they were like rolling on the ground. So this priest, you know, he said he couldn't control himself. He was trying to catch his breath, you know. And then the devotee started telling jokes. We had a couple of devotees who were like so funny, you know. And then that was it. When they started telling their jokes, you know, I thought, my God, we're going to kill the poor guy. So then we're going on and on, and we're just eating, and it's like an hour and a half, you know. The devotees are like this, you know, with sweets, you know. He wants more, and he said, well, what are those gulabers called, you know, gulaba, you know. And he eats more gulabs, you know. I was thinking, boy, you know, we better. And just that, it was like just, you know, laughing and joking, and it was prasadam spilled all over the floor. He was completely covered in sticky juice, you know, and his hands were, you know, and he's roaring and laughing, and his tunic is like this, you know. And all of a sudden we hear this on the door, you know, and like, you know, the devotees just went, because we were making a big commotion down there, you know. Open the door. It was in French. Ouvrez la porte, s'il vous plaît. Tout suite. That means open the door very quickly, you know. But he didn't stop. He kept going. Ah, Hare Krishna, gulab jamun, woo-hoo! You know, and one of the Prakasatma was saying, okay, stop, there's somebody. He's going like, give me some more of that baklava, you know. And, you know, he doesn't hear a thing, you know. And the devotees are like, you know, clean it up, you know. Okay, I'll put him in a corner or something. You know, he's going on and on like he's a drunk man, you know. He can't control him, you know. And all of a sudden, we undo the latch, and boom, the door opens, you know. And 5 of the head priests come in. And I think his name was Pierre, Père Pierre, Father Pierre, you know. And they came in, you know, and like, we kind of went, yes, you know. And Father Pierre, you know, hey, Paul, take a gulab, Jamai. You know, he's like completely intoxicated, you know. And like, the 5 fathers are like, they're looking at him like complete shock, you know. What happened to Father Pierre, you know? He's completely messy. He's got prasadam all over him. He's like on the ground, you know. Come on, take some. You know, then he starts to realize himself what's happening, you know. Yeah. He gets up. But he didn't stop laughing. So then, you know, they said to me, they said, you will leave within 30 minutes this monastery, and you will never come back. I said, Baba, we just, you know, look what you've done to poor Father Pierre. 20 years he has been here. Look at him now, you know. And Father Pierre, yeah, don't worry about it, you know. So they pick him up and walk him off, you know. And he's, you know, kind of stumbling off. And, you know, and then he waves behind, you know, and then they were really heavy, but they came in our room and they stood there, you know. They said, you get out of here, you got 20 minutes. You know, we had all our books and everything. We had to really pack it in. And then they just said, you never have permission to come back to this monastery again. So it was, anyway, there was a victory there. Shivagavara Prashadam Ki. So some years later, we got a letter in Paris from Father Pierre. And he was much older, and he'd received some responsibility there, you know. So he actually invited the devotees back, because he was in a position of superiority at this time, you know. So he said, I fondly remember my little brothers in Jesus. That's what he called us, his little brothers in Jesus. He said, I always remember my little brothers in Jesus, and how that day we took those little sweets. Be careful what you put in writing, right? I always remember my little brothers in Jesus, and that day we took those little sweets. So I said, I'm fondly looking forward to coming back and having you stay with us again. So I handed that letter over to the Sangatana devotee. I said, if you want a real experience, you know, stay in this monastery. You'll never forget it. Shri Bhagavat Prasadam Ki, Shishinatai Gaura Chandra Ki, Parents Day of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki, Gaura Premanandi. So we'll have 12:30 arti, then we'll read from Raya Vishnu, then we'll have prasadam. I'm sure there'll be some sweets. There's a lot of sweets around here. And then we'll come together again in the evening for Sundar Artik, and we'll have when will we have the slideshow? Maybe before Sundar Artik? Would that be appropriate, like 6:30 or? Okay. Anyway, it's 7 o'clock of Artik, and then afterwards we'll tell some Prabhupada stories. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Gaura Premanande, Hare Bhagavan. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada ki. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabihane, Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabihane. Gopi Janabalaba Gide Vadadade Gopi Janabalaba Gide Vadadade Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Chira Bhanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava
Bihani. Vijana Balaba Girivadatani. Vijana Balaba Girivadatani. Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Nanjana. Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Nanjana. Jamuna Tira Vana Chani. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Shishi Radha Madhava Ki. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Padiva Dikatari Oshatara Satasri Srimad. His Divine Grace is gone, Founder Acharya, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribhadikataraya Ashtatara Satasri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki. Ananta Kodi Vaishnava Rindaki, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki. Premsukho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhakti Rindaki. Shishi Radha Krishna Gopu Kavina Sama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki. Vrindavan Dham Ki, Mayapur Dham Ki Jai, Ganga Jamuna Mai Ki, Bhakti Devi Ki, Tulsi Maharani Ki. The appearance day of His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki. ISKCON Founder Acharya Sridhar Prabhupada Ki. Sri Shitai Gaura Chandra Ki. Lakshmi Narasingha Deva Ki. Christ Church Yatra Ki. Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Glories to Guru and Gauranga. Oma gyan timadandasya gyanangina shalakaya chakshur militam jenatasmai si gurave namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Shvayam Rupakadamayam Dadantishva Padantikam. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Om Amrim Shrom, Om Varom Tataka Hataka Keshna Gajalat Padakalochana, Bhadraka Nakasparsadiva Singha Namostute. Can this just go up a touch? This, so I can speak softly. Why doesn't everyone just move up about 1 yard? Makes it more cozy. Hare Krishna. Did you do it yet? Okay. Okay, that's good, yeah. So So this evening we've been requested to speak about our beloved Founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Sridhar Prabhupada. Actually, today is the appearance day of Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, His Divine Grace, Om Vishnupad Paramahansa, Puri Bhajagataryo Oshtatara Sata Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Goswami Maharaj. But it is appropriate to speak of the glories of Sridhar Prabhupada, some of the pastimes of Sridhar Prabhupada this evening, because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati once said that he would consider his whole mission to be a success if he could produce one pure devotee. Of all the things that he did, he was considering that if he could make just one pure devotee, then he would consider his mission to be a success. And that we can understand in the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, how Srila Prabhupada carried the desire of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and all the Guru Parampara to every corner of the world. So this was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's desire. Actually, not only to Srila Prabhupada, but also to others. He requested that they spread this Krishna conscious movement all over the world, because that was the desire of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu said that his name and the chanting of Hare Krishna would be heard in every town and village of the world. So that is the vision of the Acharya, or the spiritual master, the representative of the Lord, is to fulfill the Lord's instructions. So within Sridhar Prabhupada, we see the full mercy of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So then it's very appropriate to discuss Prabhupada, because by discussing Prabhupada, we glorify his Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And then we have to speak about ourselves. Anyway, because, anyway, that's the program, so. But the discussion is significant because there's Prabhupada's mercy there. So we first met Sridhar Prabhupada through his disciples. At that time, I was about 19 years old. I was a householder at the time. And I was living in Detroit, Michigan, which is in America. Actually, I'm not from there. I'm from San Francisco. But anyway, by some arrangement, I found myself there. And my former wife was going to school, and I was working as a gardener at the school, mowing the lawns and pruning the trees and trying to make money. But as things were going on, I became very interested in spiritual life. So like many young people in the 1960s, this was 1969, I was looking into different spiritual groups, different movements. And one day on the radio, I heard that there was a museum program about Lord Krishna, who was a Hindu god. So I thought to myself, I've never heard of that god. I've heard of Shiva and Brahma, and I've heard of Maharishi Yogi. I've heard of different persons. So I thought, well, let us go see this museum about this Krishna. I went to the museum. It was on the university. And I went around, looked at all the different things about Krishna, etc. And then when I came out of the museum, I heard this familiar sound. And I looked across the lawn, and there were these four celestial beings on the lawn chanting the name of this god who I just went to the museum to see. They were chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. So I looked at them, and they were very effulgent, and they all had these big sticks, like this. They were carrying these big sticks. This is what it took to deliver me from material existence. So I walked over there and I said, Hi guys. Hare Krishna. I said, they were giving a big lecture, but I just like walked straight up to them. You know, they were giving a lecture. And after the lecture, one of the devotees, he asked, Does anyone have any questions? And all the students started laughing and walking away. But I was completely transfixed on their purity and Srila Prabhupada's potency that was coming through them. So I asked one, I said, what is your name? He said, my name is Vishnu Janaswami. I said, oh, what does Vishnu Jana mean? He means the servant of Lord Vishnu. I said, what is your name? The big one. He said, my name is Brahmananda Swami. And I said, what is your name? My name is Gargamuni Swami. And what is your name? My name is Subal Swami. I said, gee, where do you guys come from? He said, we are traveling on the order of our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. I said, oh. Then he said, come, you sit down. You're a nice boy. You come sit down. I'll tell you about Srila Prabhupada. So Vishnu Jamaraj started preaching to me about Prabhupada, and 3 hours went by, and I was completely transfixed. I'd never met anyone like this before. I'd never heard the glories of such a wonderful person as Srila Prabhupada. So everything else was going on, but I just sat there listening. And then at one point, they were explaining to me about Krishna, how Krishna is the supreme controller. So I got a little bit distracted, and I noticed one of the sannyasis didn't have shoes on. I said, it was summertime, but I said, you walk everywhere barefoot like that? Why don't you get some shoes? He said, I don't have any money, but Lord Krishna will provide. I said, God's going to give you a pair of tennis shoes? He said, yes, Krishna will provide. I said, oh. 10 minutes later, a student comes by. There are different students coming in and out of the conversation, arguing and, you know, debating and, you know, they were distributing a little prasadam. So the student came, and he's going, ah, my feet hurt, you know. And he sits down, and he said, I just bought this brand new pair of tennis shoes, but they're too small for me. They really hurt my feet. He said, anybody here need a pair of tennis shoes? And Subal Maharaj raised his hand. He said, yeah, I do. And the boy said, what size do you wear? And the boy said, I have size 9. What size do you wear? And Subal looked at me, and he says, size 9. I couldn't believe it. He took his tennis shoes off and gave them to Subal Maharaj, who put them on and stood up and started dancing all around. And then Vishnu Jana Maharaj turned to him and he said, see, Krishna provides. So for me, that was like really convincing. I didn't need much more than that, you know. You know, Krishna provided the tennis shoes. So I said, can you guys spend a couple of days with us? I was living in an old broken down apartment building. It was about to be torn down. There were lots of rooms available. So I said, can you come and spend a couple days? So Vishnu Jana Maharaj, attorney of the sannyasis, he said, this nice couple is asking if we could come spend some time. What do you think? So Brahmananda said, as long as there's some good prasadam, I'll come. So I said, gee, I don't know if we got any of that. What is that, you know? So Vishnu Jana Maharaj said, you come with me. He said, do you have any money? Yeah, I got some money. He said, you got enough? I said, well, I just got my paycheck. I can cash it on the bank on the way. He said, all right, let's go. So he went and cashed the check, and then we went to the supermarket. And he took 3 of these trolleys and started filling it up with everything, you know. I said, hey, you don't need any canned food? How about some of this? Some banana? I said, well, everything natural, he said. He was taking semolina, sugar, butter. I said, you know how to cook, too? He said, yes. He said, a Vaishnava, every Vaishnava knows how to cook. I said, what's a Vaishnava? What's prasadam? What's this? They're asking so many questions. So I got, you know, practically my whole 1 month's paycheck and all this big boga, you know. And then we got back to the apartment, and they started cooking. It was in the early evening. And they cooked the most amazing feast in a couple of hours. Mostly Vishnu Jan cooked. And then they offered it to Lord Krishna, and they started hanging little pictures up and lighting incense. And I'm sure all of you, those first few moments in Krishna consciousness are very, almost like mystical. They're magical moments where the Lord makes a special arrangement through the mercy of his devotees to just detach us, you know, from our materialistic life and absorb us in Krishna consciousness, just absorbs our senses in such a wonderful way. And it was like that. Just the whole apartment was transformed into Vaikuntha. So then we sat down to this feast, and it was a big feast, like you have here, a big feast like that. So we had the paper plates around, and, you know, I just started taking my prasadam, and I noticed that Brahmananda had already finished the last bite in his plate. So then he said, can I have seconds? You know, boom, he had seconds. By the time I was halfway through my plate, he'd finished 2 plates. And by the time I was finished with 3 quarters, he'd finished 3. And I noticed that when I had finished my plate, he'd already had 4 plates of prasadam. So I said, these are pretty amazing yogis, I said. We're supposed to eat something. Anyway, then we had a really ecstatic kirtan. And chanting and dancing all around the apartment. And then it was time to take rest. It was about 10 o'clock by that night. So I was practicing some form of meditation. So I said to them, I said, you boys can go next door and take rest, and I'll get you up at 7 o'clock in the morning when I do my transcendental meditation. So Maharaj turned to me and said, that's all right, we get up at 2:30. I said, 2:30? I said, what do you do at 2:30 in the morning? He said, we glorify Srila Prabhupada. So he said it with such devotion and such conviction, I immediately said, can I get up then too? I thought, I never got up that early in my life. So he said, yes. Yeah. So at 2:45 in the morning, there was a knock on the door, and they all walked in with fresh cloth, and they touched their dandas to the ground, paid obeisances, and then we had a beautiful Mangal Arati. So like this, it went every day. They stayed 4 days. And I had to go to work every day. So I would listen to the Bhagavatam class, you know, learning the philosophy, and I kept thinking, you know, why am I going to work like this? And then every day I'd be mowing the lawn, or I'd be up in the trees, clipping or pruning the trees, and I'd see them there on the lawn, just chanting and dancing and distributing some prasadam from my paycheck. Simply wonderful, or actually quite expensive when you're just a gardener. So every day I'm there, and then at my lunch hour, I run to the kirtan party, you know, and I start chanting and dancing and everything. And then they stayed I think it was 3 days. And then that morning, on the third morning, Maharaj gave a class, and he quoted that one verse that I mentioned this morning, that just as the sticks and the different plants come together by the force of the river's waves, then in due course of time, due to the influence of time and our past karmic reactions, we're again separated. So he was giving a class like this, and he kept emphasizing the point about association with devotees. So it didn't really mean much to me at that point. But I came home that afternoon from work, and every afternoon when I would come home from work, I would see their tennis shoes lined up in front of my door. So this time I came home and the shoes weren't there. And this was my first experience of separation from devotees. As Ramananda Roy describes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu was asking him different questions. So he asked the question, what is the most painful thing in existence? And Ramananda replies, to be without the association of devotees, to be separated from devotees. So right in the beginning, I walked in and they were gone, and the whole house was back to the modes it was in before. So I was very affected, actually. I was very emotionally affected, and you know, a few tears came, and I sat down on the couch, and I said, where did they go? They didn't even tell me where they went. And then I looked into the kitchen, and there was a little, I don't know if you ever saw the original handbook, which we printed in the 1960s in America, in Los Angeles. It was the original handbook for Krishna consciousness. It was printed actually as a means to get boys out of the draft, not to have to go to Vietnam. So there was a picture of Krishna in there, a black and white picture of Krishna with curly hair and black lotus eyes. Very nice picture. So when Maharaj showed me that, I was immediately attracted. So this was his book, but he cut that picture out, put it in a frame, and put it on the dining room table. And he had a little spoon, which was used by Kartamashi. Kartamashi is a deity of just Krishna. He's standing like this with his flute. I don't think we see this these days, but in the old days, different temples used to have Kartamashi. We didn't put him on the altar, but we took him in different engagements. So Prabhupada had used a spoon in the service of Lord Kartamashi when he was in San Francisco, 1967-68. So Vishnujan, Prabhupada had given that spoon to Vishnujan Maharaj. So Vishnujan Maharaj told me a few days before that was his most valued possession. But he said, I am a sannyasi. He said, Krishna takes all my possessions away. He only leaves me with the wealth of the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. So this was all new, the wealth of the holy name? I mean, what is just a sound, you know? No, it is non-different than Krishna. So he preached to me for hours. So he had this little spoon. He said it was his last attachment. So when I came home, there was a little note on the table with my name on it. He said, I'm giving this spoon to you so you'll never forget Lord Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. And there was also a picture of Srila Prabhupada there. So this really, like, broke my heart, you know. So they left no address, nothing. They just disappeared. So they didn't even mention there were other temples. They hadn't instructed us. In those days, there weren't many temples. There was San Francisco, New York, Seattle, maybe one or two. There weren't very many temples, so they just left. That was it. So then I went back to work in a couple of days, and I was always thinking of them. Shishitai Goda Chandraki. Always thinking. And then I met one person who said, oh yeah, he saw some people like that in the city in Detroit. I said, really? said, yeah, they had the same robes on, they had their heads shaved. So I drove to Detroit, you know, that same day. And sure enough, I found someone else who mentioned that there was a temple. They just opened a temple there. So that Sunday, I went to the temple and I walked in. And I said, wow, I'm so happy to be here. I said, it's wonderful. I met four persons like you who are carrying big sticks. And the devotee who met me at the Sunday feast, he said, yeah, they're just nonsense. They just travel around. They're not responsible. I said, wait a minute. Those guys are my best friends I ever met. I said, I'm getting out of here. I'm never coming back to this place again. And I ran out. And all the devotees ran after me. No, no, don't go. It's just a misunderstanding. I said, I'm never coming back to this place again, ever. And I ran in my car and drove off. And I was determined.